lost again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. That is the lovely Vera Lynn. Keep shining through. Yeah. We'll meet again. If you've ever watched the movie film, Dr. Strangelove, that great Kubrick classic, at the end of the film, Dr. Strangelove, they play this song by Vera Lynn, We'll Meet Again. And it's a great song. Vera Lynn is very talented. One of my favorite songs is A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. It's from World War II. If you want to know, am I a throwback? Listen, my dad grew up during the Great Depression. He was in World War II. He listened to big band music. He loved Henry Mancini. It's the kind of shit we listen to. It doesn't make sense. Because my parents should have been hippies. But instead, they were the other generation. The generation the hippies got. And maybe I lucked out. I didn't get hippie parents. I did not get baby boom parents. They were not baby boomers. And in that sense, I really, 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 really fucking lucked out. Anywho, it's a good song. Sorry for the singing. If you didn't enjoy my singing, I get it. It's one of those songs that seems appropriate at this particular point in human history. And so, you know, I have a little cup of coffee here. It is still September the 25th, 2019. It's just, well, it's 22:22, which means it's 10:22. Wow, 10:22 Ruger Carbine. That's the time it is right now. 10:22 Ruger Carbine, 22:22. It is after 10 p.m. It is 10:22 p.m. September 25th. Isn't it great on this Wednesday? As some of you may or may not know, I dabble in fiction. I write a little. I've been on a bit of a, I don't know, I don't want to call it writer's block. Because I could write perfectly fine if I wanted to. I've been in a weird place as far as writing for about 6, 7, 8, 9 months now. And the main reason why is because I've gotten to this place. It's a hard place for me. It's hard to navigate. I need to work on it. But I get to these places sometimes where I think to myself, what's the fucking point? Like, I personally do not have a really optimistic view of the future. And you all know this. If you listen to my podcast, you know that I think some rough times are ahead. And when I say rough times, keep in mind, I don't mean hard times in the sense of you might have to, you know, I don't know how to put this. I don't know how to put this because a lot of people just don't know what I mean when I say rough times. It isn't going to be you're going to have to substitute tofu for chicken. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about. I think it's very possible, if not this year, but next year, that we're going to have some food shortages around the world, and that will show up in America. And here's the deal, folks. Whatever you want to say about politics, a lot of politics around the world generally, you know, starts with and ends with the fucking stomach. People have to eat. And if you can't eat, it doesn't really matter what you fucking believe, because eventually you're going to die. And we set it up this way. If you want to know how this happened, well, welcome to the modern technological efficient world. You demanded this. You demanded this efficiency. You demanded just in time. You demanded that you should be able to eat your oil. You demanded that you should be able to eat food that's shipped around the world. Okay, and you gave up on your local agriculture. You gave up on the whole fucking concept. These are things you demanded. And yeah, maybe you didn't explicitly vote for it. Maybe you didn't vote for it, but you did kinda. You supported leaders and politicians and policies that led here. If you live in a city, there's probably, at best, a few weeks worth of food. And that's being really optimistic. And that's assuming, you know, you're talking about middle-class neighborhoods that have big pantries. But if you're living in a city right now that has a great deal of poverty, and I think a lot of cities do, but they lie about it, then really the balance of food is almost zero, if not potentially negative, and it will go negative fast. So as you know, as I said, I write, and there was a story that I was going to write. I still might write it. I don't think so, because as history unfolds, it probably won't matter, and it'll be irrelevant. It'll be passé. The title of the story was Autumn Lights, and the idea behind the story was a United States of America, not today, probably 5 or 10 years in the future. Yeah, I think it's going to happen that fast, where basically a lot of things just stop working. A lot of stuff simply stops working, okay? A lot of the things we take for granted, like, for example, 24/7 electricity. Yeah, you're not going to have it 24/7. If you're really, really fucking lucky, you'll have it for a few hours a day at night. And that's honestly what I see coming. It's one of the reasons why I'm really skeptical of crypto. I think crypto is bullshit for lots of reasons, not least of which it's dependent upon a technological infrastructure that is not at all solid. If you think that the internet and the electrical systems and the technology that you purchase at Fry's Electronics, that these things are guaranteed to show up, that you'll get replacement parts, I'm sorry, that's just not reality. The United States could very much become a secondhand society for a while, which means that I don't know what to tell you to stockpile. In that kind of scenario, I don't know to tell you to stockpile silver and gold or ammo, or frankly, to get a bunch of plastic fucking big old fucking, you know, 80-gallon drums and fill them with paperback books from the fucking used bookstore. Oh, Dan, that's crazy. Why would I go get a bunch of DVDs and used books? Why would I buy a bunch of dirty, nasty books? Everybody's got a Kindle. Well, the Kindle, too, will probably stop working. And so all those books you bought, all those really great books, they might come in handy. So the idea behind the story Autumn Lights, to get back to the subject, the story Autumn Lights was about this country in the future. Things kind of fall apart. And it's not like there's total chaos, but simply speaking, and this is the reason for the title, society has been turned down a bit. Like, essentially, there's just not as much stuff. Economic growth has virtually ground to a halt. And mostly what we're talking about at that point is absolutely a kind of tapeworm economy, or rather a cannibalistic economy, an economy that essentially amounts to taking things apart. And this is something that James Howard Kunstler talks about in some of his fictional work, and I'm not stealing from him. This is not about that at all. But essentially, it's a very similar kind of scenario. But there is still technology, there's still electricity in this world. And in this particular scenario, and it's kind of a horror story, not a horror story, I would say it's kind of an action story if I write it. It basically set in a small town in Nebraska. And let's say it's Chadron, Nebraska. I once stopped in Chadron, Nebraska because I flipped a truck coming back from airborne school during a snowstorm. Yeah, it was, oh my God, April or May 1997. And I really loved that pickup. But in the story, this particular town comes under attack. And keep in mind, in this particular future, it's not like it's easy to pick up the phone and say, state police, come help us. Guess what? The state police are probably taking care of 50 other fires at that moment. Okay? And it's not like the National Guard's going to come and help you either. In this scenario, it's just not that easy. And what makes it worse is that the particular attack they come under is kind of like, you can think of it like a modern version of the barbarians of the second and third century AD. like the Goths and the Visigoths and the Vandals and the Franks. Imagine a roving group of people, but these are like veterans. These are people who've been trained in combat. These are folks who went to fight our wars and we treated like shit. And so they start forming these gangs, and one particular gang with a really smart person on their team basically builds a localized, what you call a localized or focused EMP device. And the idea is this. They go to a small town, like the one in the story. They set up the EMP device. They knock out all the electricity, which includes communications. Nobody can contact anybody. And then they go to work. They do what they want to do. They are barbarians. Then they act like barbarians. Now, I have not written the story yet. Fact is, I've had that writer's block because of my feelings about the future. And the story is about that future. This is a tough one. I mean, part of me wants to write this story, and part of me thinks it needs to go to the back of my head in the hope that we avoid this possible future, you know? I really don't want us to end up in that world, because that world will suck. The terrible truth is, though, of all the possible futures, that particular future is one of the least horrible. The future described in Autumn Lights, it's just that dimmer future, as ugly as it sounds, where you have roving gangs terrorizing people, it sounds terrible, but there are worse situations. Anyways, I want to go to the next topic. Next topic. So it is said by a historian or two that Voltaire, the great French philosopher of politics and society, the author of Candide, it is said that Voltaire once said that the Holy Roman Empire was neither holy nor Roman nor empire. Now, for those of you who want to know, the Holy Roman Empire was essentially an institution that more or less was created under Charlemagne. And that would be in the 8th century AD, a long-ass time ago. And that would be 1,000 years before Voltaire made that statement, plus or minus. So Charlemagne creates this Holy Roman Empire, and it just becomes the kind of structure by which Western Europe emerges from what's referred to as the Dark Age. Now, folks, as I've said in the past, the historical definition of a Dark Age is any period of time for which there's very little written history. So what you have is some mythology, you have some oral history, but you don't really have a lot of like written history, not a lot of records. That's technically what a Dark Age is. So when the Western Roman Empire collapsed in the 5th century AD, from roughly that period of time, let's say the year 450, up until about the year 800, or maybe better say 750, so that was about 300 years, which isn't a super long time, okay? When you consider how slow things were back in the day, that isn't a super long time. It's a long time, but really, things didn't change that fast. So, for about 300 years in Western Europe, there was more or less a kind of Dark Age. That is essentially what it was like. Holy Roman Empire. Voltaire said that the Holy Roman Empire was neither holy nor Roman nor empire. And what he meant was this. By the time you get to the 18th century, the Holy Roman Empire is really just a loose collection of German states. Germanic states. Really Germanic countries. You know, people who say, like, people who think of Germany as it is today, or even as it was 100 years ago, what they don't realize is that Germany in that sense is really a constructed thing. Something that the Prussians under Bismarck constructed in the 1850s and 1860s, ending with the Franco-Prussian War. So when you think of Germany, you kind of have to think of Germany pre and post Bismarck. The bottom line is this, though. In the 18th century, Germany, as we understand it, was, you know, 20 or 30 little states, Prussia being the most powerful, but there were a bunch of little states in Germany. And it wasn't even called Germany. It wasn't called that at all. That being said, I was thinking about that quote, and it's kind of a sarcastic quote. Obviously, Voltaire is being a bit of a douche, but I was thinking about that quote, and I thought, you know, when you think about it, that's a lot like social justice warrior. Like, you could say the following about social justice warriors. They're neither social nor justice nor warrior. They really are none of the above. And like so many things these days, as I tell you, you have to remember, we live in a time of great irony. Really great irony. Things are labeled the opposite of what they are. So when you hear social justice warrior, you need to flip those things, saying, you have to flip those things over. It's antisocial, basically injustice, coward. An antisocial coward who wants to promote injustice. That is what a social justice warrior is. That is how you have to see things these days. Okay, everything is ironic. Next topic. Because I feel like I got off topic there. I made a mistake. I flipped topics. I was talking about Autumn Lights, and then I went to this Voltaire thing. Next topic, assisted living Teotihuacan. And if you don't know what Teotihuacan means, it's like that song by R.E.M. It's the end of the world as we know it. That's what Teotihuacan means, and I feel fine. I don't know if I feel fine. I made some, I don't know. I made some, you know, jambusium kind of stew tonight. I mixed together some of the bits and pieces I have here and there. I'm sure it has vitamins and I'm sure it has minerals, but if these are vitamins or minerals the body should consume, I do not know. Like I tell you all the time, I get most of my health advice from Dr. Grunkus. And Dr. Grunkus will not see me until tomorrow at midnight. Anywho, assisted living Teotihuacan. What do I mean by that? So there are a lot of people who will tell me, they'll say, Dan. Yes, 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 you're so right, but all of this is going to happen over hundreds of years. And the people that run the world really, really love us. Well, no, they don't. They don't love us, but they kind of want us to beat us up or something, to torture us slowly. They get some benefit out of slowly torturing us. They have control. Everything is fine. They won't lose control. It'll just be an endless descent into slavery. And the thing is, folks, especially for those of you who are Austrians, because if you're an Austrian, you should have a certain amount of common sense. You really should. It's kind of like that movie Idiocracy. I love the movie. The only flaw in the film, and again, I get why they had to do it. It's the only way you can make that movie work. The only flaw in the film is it wouldn't take 500 fucking years. I can promise you, when we become completely a nation of idiots, when the last competent people kill themselves or just don't show up to work at the local nuclear reactor, I promise you, no amount of peeing on it will help you. It'll take a few hours, maybe a couple days, and yeah, you're gonna have a meltdown and you're fucked. No, it's not gonna take 500 years, folks. Once the stupid have total control, it will not take 500 years. If you believe it'll take 500 years for the stupid people to destroy the world, my God, you're far too fucking optimistic. It more like 5 years. And that's kind of being optimistic as well. You see, a lot of people believe in this assisted living Teotihuacan. That's why I call it. You can call it the slow burn, or you can call it the boiled frog. And there's truth to all this. But let's talk about the boiled fucking frog for a second. Let's chat about the boiled fucking frog. Here's a simple fact about our good friend the boiled frog. And I've never tested this because I'm not an inherently cruel person. I've never gotten a frog and put it in water and slowly boiled it. I think that's kind of fucked up. That's Ted Bundy shit. So I've never done it. So I don't even know if it's true. I don't even know if it's true that if you put a frog in boiling water, it immediately jumps out, but if you slowly boil it, it dies. That's probably true. I'm sure it's true. I just don't know that it's true. I've never actually done it. But here's the thing. Even if it is true, even if the frog is being slowly boiled, here's something you need to understand. The frog eventually dies. There is no happy ending for the frog. Whether the frog is slowly heading towards death, or whether you smash the frog with a large hammer, the frog is still equally fucking dead. And here's what's even more fucking important. The moment of death, when you die, takes the same amount of time, whether you're shot with a gun, hit by a truck, or dropped from outer space. The moment of death is an instantaneous moment. You're here, and then you're gone. So it really doesn't matter how you got there. You will still simply be dead. Now, the question you need to ask yourself is, as a boiled frog, do you think you're closer to the water being tepid or the water being boiling? Because as of right now, when I look at the human race, when I look at the boiled frog situation, I see boiling water. I don't see tepid water. I don't see lukewarm. I see the fires of Hades heating this cauldron. A lot of people out there want to believe that we will slowly tiptoe towards collapse and we won't even notice, and that way their kids can grow up and have some kind of life that will be something that maybe is worth living. A lot of people, especially people with kids, want to believe in the slow burn because, fuck, why wouldn't you? Nobody wants to tell their kids that at any moment, everything they take for granted could disappear. On the other hand, if you're a good parent, that's probably what I would tell my kids. I would have an honest conversation. I would say, look around. Look at the flat screen TV. Look at the computers. Look at the little smart device. Look at all the things you take for granted. Look at the food in the refrigerator. Look at the fact that you have a refrigerator, that you have the means of keeping food cold. These things are not guarantees. There is nothing written on stone at the bottom of any river that says human beings get refrigerators. In fact, there's nothing written on stone at the bottom of any river that guarantees you one fucking thing. So if you're asking yourself, should you have that fucking conversation? Should you say to your kids, there's a lot of things that you think are guaranteed and they're not guaranteed. I'm not a parent, but I would recommend it. Because otherwise, I think you're setting your kids up for failure. I think there are a lot of kids that have been raised either on the utopia of technology future, the Jetson future theory, the Google, fucking Amazon, order everything online, perfect future. A lot of people have been raised on that. And then even amongst preppers, a lot of people have been raised on, it's going to be bad, but not that bad. Like, that's generally it. Like, especially amongst preppers that have kids, because how can you tell your kids that you really can't prepare for something like this? That it's not only going to be really bad, but there's no way to prepare for it. I'm being blunt to everybody who's listening. I think prepping is great. I think especially it makes sense to have food on hand. At this point in human history, I don't know how much food I would keep on hand for the simple fact that I might have to bug out where I'm at right now. Where I'm at right now, I may have to pack my bags and bug out and leave behind what I gotta leave behind. That's reality. That's closer to reality than telling your kids that they're gonna have magical fucking space robots and they'll all be perfect and beautiful and they'll never get sick again in the future. But I'm telling you, probably most of the parents in this country today, they give them the latter, not the former speech. They give them the everything's going to be fine and everybody's going to get what they want and everyone gets an A. I'm telling you right now, that is bullshit. But I'm also telling you, this slow burn, this slow tipping towards the end, the tiptoeing towards the end is also bullshit. Here's the thing, folks. It's like I brought up before about that quote from Hemingway. How'd you go broke? Slowly, then all at once. That's how discontinuous systems behave. All of a sudden, the ground under your feet shifts on you, and you fall end over end. That's an earthquake, okay? Earthquakes are discontinuous. If you want to understand what is about to happen, imagine an earthquake, but an earthquake so big that it sends echoes through time, backwards and forwards, that people will feel the echo of the thing that's coming, the heat of the thing that's coming, the spiritual energy of the thing that's coming. And I know this sounds crazy. They're going to feel the heat of this before it happens. This is how bad this is going to be. And it could also be that good. The thing about the future at this point is there's no telling. Like, I cannot tell you for certain it's going to be bad. I think odds are, at this moment, it looks bad. But the thing about living in a time like this is that all the probabilities are shifting every fucking day. So if you're asking me, should I do this, should I do that? Frankly speaking, it depends upon the day of the week at this point. It's very much a Markov process at this point. If you want to know tomorrow, you need to ask yourself what's going on today. That is the nature of living in a time of extreme discontinuity. So yeah, everything could be normal until it's not. And then when the day comes when it's not going to, like, there's going to be no slow fucking transition. It'll be like walking. Imagine you had a stairway, okay? You had a stairway in your home, and you have a mental model of it because you go up and down the stairway every fucking day. Every day you go up this flight of stairs, every fucking day you go down it, you go up and down, up and down. You know it, it's in your head. One day the lights are out, and horrible for horrible, some terrible, terrible demon comes along and removes the last four steps of your stairway. Okay, kind of like being at airborne school. If you've ever been to airborne school during ground week when you're learning your PLFs, your parachute landing falls, all of mine were butt falls of the Fryer drop zone. I aim for the sand, buddy, at Fort Benning. Needless to say, imagine it's the lights are out, you can't see where you're going, but you have the mental model of the stairway. You have the mental model, and it tells you there's a stairway, and you're walking down it, and everything's fine. But the demon took the last three steps away. And then you fall. And you don't die. It's a lot like airborne school. It's only about, let's say it's only 3 or 4 feet. Maybe you twist your ankle. Maybe you scuff yourself up. That is a nice way of describing what day zero could feel like. And frankly, I think it's going to feel way fucking worse for a lot of people. A lot of people have a mental model, including preppers, of what's coming. They have this mental model, and they think it's going to be, oh, I'll walk down the steps, and then I'll go, and I'll use my gold and my silver to buy my fucking venison, and I'll buy my fucking leather jackets, and I'll go hunt beaver. And yeah, it's going to be a fucking amazing Teotihuacan frontier life paradise of technology and adventure. Being chased by Sasquatch in the woods. No, it's not going to be any of those fucking things. I don't know for certain what it will be, but the thing is, as a Christian, I also know that even if what's coming is the big one. And when I say the big one, Christians know what I'm talking about. John the Revelator. When I say the big one, you know what I'm talking about. Even if it is the big one, it simply means that it's a time of challenge and being tested. It also means it's going to be a time of Christians, actual Christians. I don't mean the one world religion, kiosk Jesus, fucking THX 1138 Christian religion that's coming, the actual one of these false religions. I mean actual Christianity. For actual Christians, this time could be horrible. I mean, people will be hunted. This is what the book says. You will be hunted. If you're a Christian in this particular time, you will be hunted. You will be killed. You will be tortured. It will be like the first century in Rome. So I don't know what this future is, but I can feel the heat of it. And it's not the assisted living Teotihuacan. It's not more of the same but worse. It is a complete end over end, falling on your ass, everything's gone wrong situation. Next topic. So I had somebody tell me that I should go to China and teach English. Now, if you've listened to my podcasts, and that includes you, China, you all know why that might be the worst fucking idea ever. And I don't blame this person. I think he's a cool dude. I think he means well. Like, I think he literally means well. He thinks that going to China would be good for me or something, and I totally get it. The problem is, I think if I went to China and I had a podcast like the one I have now, I'd probably be dead within a week. Okay, I don't really believe there's some fucking paradise for me in China. There is definitely not an anarchist paradise in China. If you think there's some anarchist paradise in China, you are crazy. Okay? The Chinese Communist government tolerates certain things. And you could say, you could argue that its tolerance is a kind of freedom, but it's really not. It just means that as a crocodile, it's just looking at something else. It'll get to you later, buddy. I can promise you that. So I've had people tell me this. And the thing is, this is an interesting subject because, and how can I put this? I've had people I know over the last 10 years talk about going to other countries as a way to escape the tyrannical bullshit that exists in our country today in the United States. And it's like, oh, I'll go to Costa Rica. I'll go to Costa Rica. I'll find a home there. I'll go to, you know, New Zealand. I'll be a Kiwi. I mean, yeah, think about that. You went to fucking New Zealand and now they're collecting guns. You have to consider these things, people. There are people who talk about going to fucking Ecuador or going to Argentina or going to one of these gulches that gets created by some of these libertarian real estate overlords who believe that if they pay the locals a fee every year, they can protect themselves. I believe if you have put yourself in a libertarian paradise in any other country, that you are taking great risks. Okay? You are believing in a future that is not likely to happen. Okay? I am 100% convinced that when things go bad, and they will, people will turn on gringo first. And if you don't think so, if you feel, no, Dan, you have to understand, people aren't like that. Yeah, I know what people are like. I have seen in my life people behave like monsters over trivial fucking shit, over Black Friday. And you're telling me you think you know what people will do? Nah, you have no fucking clue. You really don't. So if you're set up in some gulch, if you're set up in some libertarian, some libertarian compound someplace, believing that you can pay the peasants in gold, you know, after day zero, listen, it doesn't take long for the peasants to figure out that you're not getting the gold shipped in. And then they just take your fucking gold. Okay? That's what happens. Should I go to China? Should I go anywhere? You know, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. In fact, I suppose my only real superhero power is that I have fucked up a lot in my life and I am still alive. I should be dead. If I think about all my screw-ups, if I think about all the things I've done wrong, I should not be alive. And I've said this in the past, that too is a kind of elegant proof for God. But I'm just saying, you know, one of my biggest mistakes was believing after my divorce in 2014 that getting on a train, I don't know if you can hear that ambulance, and this new microphone on this H4N Pro is pretty good. You can probably hear the howling of the klaxon. The howling of the siren. The howling of that noise in the night. Okay, so back to the subject. In 2014, and I have a mini documentary I can link to, but in 2014, I decided to essentially say, fuck this bullshit. I'm going back to Indiana. Now you could say, Dan, how the hell would you say that? Well, here's the deal. When I got out of the service in 99, I ended up in Indianapolis. I had family there. I ended up there. I don't want to talk about how it just happened. And I kind of fell in love with the place. But here's the thing. In 2003, I left Indianapolis. So I hadn't really lived there for 10 years. And in my head, after my divorce, it was like, well, Dan, maybe you can just get on that train. Maybe you can just get on that train and take a ride back to 2003. Even though it's 2014. And that's not very likely. Now, of course, that's not the same as going to China or Costa Rica. That's not the same as going to Canada or New Zealand or some other fucking place. But one of the things I said in that little video I made about it is that I'm probably just changing seats on an airplane. And that's the thing you have to consider. If you're one of these people who's considering leaving the United States for someplace better, you really have to ask yourself, even if there were someplace better, isn't it the same fucking airplane? Do you really think there's something special about the United States that's going to make things worse here than other places? Actually, the real truth might be is that other places are already in turmoil, and things are getting worse, and that we might be the last place that, you know, basically goes to hell, but that doesn't mean we'll be the only place that goes to hell. And actually, if I had to choose between being around family and people that know me and I can speak the language, which means in a fucking crisis situation, I can actually explain my situation, I will choose that over any other fucking place. And that includes places where they quote unquote speak English. Because I gotta tell you, if the Kiwis are willing to give up their guns like that, if they're willing to be scared to death so they give up their only means of protecting themselves because their government said, holy crap, owning guns means you're going to kill people. Yeah, I don't want to be in New Zealand. They're not very brave people, which means they will do cowardly evil things when shit gets bad. That's the flip side of not being courageous. You end up being a monster. The coward becomes the bully. I don't know if you know this or not. Maybe I'm teaching you something you don't fucking know. The coward becomes the bully. The coward becomes the thug leader. The coward becomes the person who can't reason, can't communicate, can't settle, can't even defend themselves. So they end up picking up the sticks and the rocks and the bags of fucking D-cell batteries and beating their neighbors to death because, again, God forbid anybody have a firearm to defend themselves. Next topic. So, my nephew graduated from Naval Boot Camp. I'm not surprised. He did well. I'm not surprised. He's a good kid. Yeah, as an anarchist, I have some mixed feelings. It's his fucking life. It's not my life. I also went into the army. I went into the military in my 20s. So how am I going to fucking tell him anything? It's his life. I hope and pray he's safe. And I hope and pray that he avoids any of these nasty, stinking wars. I really don't know. And if things get as bad as I think they could get, it probably doesn't fucking matter. He might even be safer in his role as, you know, a nuclear reactor engineer / electronics guy. He might even end up being safer in his role than his own parents. I really don't know. The fact is, in modern warfare, not as we currently fight it. Currently, we fight enemies that can't really hurt us. They can hurt our soldiers. They can't really hurt us. And I don't want to talk about 9/11. Boy, I don't want to talk about that again. But a world war, like World War III, yeah, there's not going to be a safe. There's going to be no safe place. There's going to be no safe space. If you're a snowflake, and you're wondering about World War III and where you can hide with your fucking avocado toast. So anywho, my nephew graduated from boot camp for Navy. I don't even know if they call it boot camp. They probably call it Sailor's School or the Great Queensley School of the Queensley Navy. I don't give a fuck. Ask the fucking crocodile. And when I say crocodile, you know I mean government. Ask the fucking crocodile about the Great Queensley Navy. What I will tell you is this. My sister, one of my sisters, I have six sisters, just for the record, one brother. One of my sisters is in heaven with my mom and dad and all of my grandpas. Yeah, that's another story. But one of my sisters was at my nephew's graduation, rightly so. You know, there is a proud parent with her husband. But this is the same sister that is also the proud owner. I didn't say mother. I think it's weird when people say mom about their pets. But she's the proud owner of Beans. Beans means the magical fucking French bulldog. And so while my sister was at my nephew's naval boot camp graduation thingy, she asked another sister of mine, yes, another sister, if she would watch Beans. And I would like to read to you the report of my other sister, and it has not been edited to protect anybody. In fact, I will get to the point of this afterwards. I would like to read my other sister's report concerning Beans and watching Beans. Beans is a nightmare, but he's also really lovable. He has zero skills, zero. He wouldn't survive out there. He's mentally handicapped, or it's bad dog parenting. Now, here's the thing, folks. Having read that, I know there is a sister, the sister with the nephew that graduated from the naval thingy. I know that that sister could listen to this and say, Dan, are you stirring up shit? Dan, are you stirring up shit between the sisterhood of the Sullivan sisters? How do you think I fucking survived this long? The only way to survive, if you have the situation I have, which is six sisters and one brother, is to stir shit amongst the sisters. It's exactly what the U.S. does in the Middle East. We stir a lot of shit. We keep everybody kind of at odds with everybody. And that way we can go in and steal all the oil. I'm kidding. But no, you get what I'm saying here, though. Beans is a nightmare. I think Beans is probably going to get some obedience training, and this is good news. We've already talked about this in a previous podcast. That's good news. I just thought it was funny. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I don't think my sister that got the French Bulldog did anything wrong. I think these things are creatures of a different kind of, I almost said creatures of a different Eden, but they're like creatures of a different creation. They're not really meant to be here. Like, there's nothing about a French bulldog that says to you, this creature would last long. In fact, the first time it started bleeding, its infernal noises in the woods, every fucking predator still left alive, every cougar, every coyote, every fucking golden eagle would be swooping down to get Beans. That's the truth of it. In fact, some days I wonder if he's just going to be sitting out there in the backyard. Mom's at work. Dad's at work. Sister is at work. And really, they're not brothers and sisters and moms and dads. This is a fucking dog. But they're all at work, and little Beans is waiting outside. It's a wonderful day in Seattle, Washington, but no, we're in Des Moines. We're in Des Moines, Washington, and little Beans is alone at home, playing in the backyard. Yeah, and he's going to be playing out there. And he'll be frolicking, like he'll be frolicking about, and all excited. And then all of a sudden, Beans will see a shadow. What is that thing in the sky? Will be the thought in Beans' little tiny brain. What is that shadow in the sky? It's blotting out the sun. Oh, maybe I should go inside. Maybe I should hide under the shack. Maybe I should figure a way out of this mess, you sons of a bitches. But I don't know what to do. I'm simply going to watch this shadow as it hovers above. Maybe I'll say something nice like, "Hi, Havu." What the fuck? It just changed direction towards me. Oh my god, it's swooping down from the sun. I can't move. I'm frozen. I'm Beans the French Bulldog. I'm frozen in fear. Yeah, so, yeah, and a golden eagle just swoops down and picks up Beans and takes him away to the little clutch of little golden eagles on some cliffy side where there's a little nest, and Beans is torn to pieces by a bunch of little golden eagles. That's what I see for him in the future if he doesn't fucking clean up his act, you know? I'm telling you, Beans, I'm pleading with you. I know you can hear me. I know that you're in the ether sphere, you're not quite here, not quite there. I know that you are the equivalent of an aborted normal dog. So maybe in that sense, you've always been on both sides of the veil. What I'm telling you, Beans, is you need to fucking slow your roll, buddy. You need to listen to your moms. You need to fucking take care. And you need to watch out for the golden eagles. Because they're coming for you, buddy. You're just a little cute little furry bit of blumby. You're just a breakfast meal for the clutch. That's right, Beans. You're just breakfast. You're just breakfast food. And as stated before, and I think I'll be doing this off and on with my podcasts, I do accept donations for these podcasts. You're not obligated. One form of payment would be simply to forward my link to other people. But I do have a link to Venmo. That's Victor, Echo, November, Mike, Oscar, right? Venmo. I do have a link to Venmo on my homepage on SoundCloud. And you can get to it instantly using iamsully.com. However, since you're already listening to me, you're kind of almost already there. So yeah, if you go to my fucking homepage, there should be a link there to Venmo, and you can donate if you want to. I won't say no. I'm also going to start including the link at the bottom, you know, in each one of these podcast posts at the bottom of the post, you know, in the notes area, the text area, whatever you want to call it. So if people want to donate, they can, but you're not obligated. As I say in the past, in the future, for all time, I'm not a charity case. I'm not a case of pity. If you enjoy the podcast and you want to send me money, I also won't turn it away. I will not turn money away. Not in 2019. Not living in Little Saigon. If you live in Little Saigon, you need all the money you can get. In Little Saigon, you need all the cash for hookers and Dr. Grunkus. You need all the cash you can find to get all kinds of cocaine and to chase your nightmares down the streets of your own forgotten past. Yeah, so anyways, if you want to donate, you can. You don't have to. And I hope you guys are having a great Wednesday. It's weird. I've done a lot of these podcasts today. I also tried not to drink as much today. You know, that's okay too, to not drink. To just say, I'm not going to drink as much today. It's not your problem. I've been drinking too much beer. That's my problem. Anyways, I'm going to maybe tomorrow get a little, you know, fluoridated sparkling water with a hint of beer, also called Pabst Blue Ribbon. I hope you guys have a great evening. What's left of it? It's almost midnight. Do you know where your French bulldog is, you fuck?